Welcome to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Today we'll recap Tuesday's election results in both New Jersey and New York.
To get to any of us, you will have to get through all of us.
We'll learn about recurrent pericarditis, the medical condition that ended the playing career of Rangers legendary goalie Henrik Lundqvist. King Henrik will join us to talk about a new awareness campaign he's involved with and a look back at his amazing career on the ice.
You know, to be honest, you know, I work out now. I live a pretty healthy life. That being said, I do think about my heart a lot.
And WBGO's Anna Gordon takes us back to a popular 1990s cartoon that featured jazz music as she speaks to the creator of Hey Arnold.
All I care about is keeping the legacy of Hey Arnold alive as long as I can, because I always would do more stories if I could.
All this coming up today on the WBGO Journal. It was a big night for the Democrats in both New Jersey and New York. We'll start in New York, where Democrat Socialist Zoran Mondani will become the next mayor of New York City. He beat out Andrew Cuomo and Curtis Sliwa in a three-way race. WBGO's Scott Pringle has more from Mamdani's campaign headquarters.
An energized Mamdani praised his 100,000-plus campaign volunteers and his family for helping him to victory.
My friends, we have toppled a political dynasty.
Mamdani once again pounded his affordability campaign message, vowing to make buses and childcare free and freeze the rent.
Because the Donald Trumps of our city have grown far too comfortable taking advantage of their tenants. We will hire thousands more teachers. We will cut waste from a bloated bureaucracy.
His message to President Trump:
to get to any of us, you will have to get through all of us.
Scott Pringle, WBGO News.
In the Garden State, Democrat Mikey Sherrill defeated Republican Jack Cittarelli by a wide margin in the New Jersey race for governor. WBGO's David Matthau reports.
A jam-packed ballroom of supporters at the East Brunswick Hilton roared as Sherrill declared victory. She reminded the crowd that Jersey's motto is liberty and prosperity and reiterated her promise to fight for democracy.
We're going to follow Lady Liberty's beacon. We're not going to give in to our darker impulses. Here in New Jersey, we know that this nation has not ever been, nor will it ever be, ruled by kings.
As the crowd chanted her name, Sherrill said she will work to ensure that every Garden State resident thrives. At Mikey Sherrill headquarters in East Brunswick, New Jersey, David Matthau, WBGO News.
WBGO's Kenneth Burns was at Cittarelli's election night gathering in Somerset County when the former assemblyman conceded.
Cittarelli told supporters that he is proud of the race he ran, visiting all 564 municipalities and more than 600 diners across the Garden State.
I hit two more today. I've had more BLTs and onion soups over the past 18 months than anybody on record.
Cittarelli says his loss does not mean he was unsuccessful at raising important issues, issues like affordability and criminal justice.
It is my hope that Mikey Sherrill has heard us in terms of what we need to do to make New Jersey that place where everybody can once again feel they can achieve their American dream.
Cittarelli says he isn't planning on retiring to Florida, but he is going to take some time to reflect on what he could have done differently. From Bridgewater, I'm Kenneth Burns, WBGO News.
Meanwhile, Democratic Assemblywomen Margie Donovan and Lou Ann Peter-Paul won second terms after turning aside Republican challengers seeking to flip New Jersey's 11th legislative district. Donovan and Peter-Paul defeated Republicans Andrew Wardell, mayor of Neptune City, and U.S. Green Building Council co-chair Jessica Ford. The Monmouth County-based district had remained under GOP control with a few interruptions for decades until Democrats won its assembly seats in 2015. Republicans regained control of them in 2021, but Democrats flipped them again 2 years ago. The Jersey City mayoral race is headed for a runoff next month between City Councilman James Solomon and former New Jersey Governor Jim McGreevy. We get that story from WBGO's Janice Kirkell.
Solomon was the top vote-getter with almost 30% at the time the race was called. McGreevy followed closely with 25.5%. Because neither candidate got 50%, voters will head to the polls again on December 2nd as the two candidates face off. The election saw McGreevy make a bold return to politics after being outed as gay and resigning amid a 2004 sex scandal. Incumbent Mayor Steve Fulop announced he would not seek re-election after losing the Democratic gubernatorial primary to Governor-elect Mikey Sherrill. He has since accepted a lucrative private sector job in Manhattan. Janice Kirkell, WBGO News.
Four candidates ran for two seats representing Hoboken and a part of Jersey City in the state assembly. A spokesperson for Katie Brennan said that she had won one of the two seats. Hoboken Mayor Ravi Bala took the other. Brennan said people want representatives who will fight for them as they struggle with high rents, a generally high cost of living, and failing transit systems. Incumbent Democrats John Allen and Jessica Ramirez did not seek re-election. The latest guest on my podcast, Sports Jam, had to leave the National Hockey League after a serious medical condition back in 2020. He joins us now on the WBGO Journal because he's involved in an awareness campaign that could save many lives.
A Rangers legend!
Joining us today is NHL Hall of Fame goalie and New York Rangers legend, Henrik Lundqvist. King Henrik, great to see you.
Good to see you.
And also joining us is board-certified non-invasive cardiologist, Dr. Jonathan Salek. Dr. Salek, we appreciate you being on Sports Jam today.
Thanks for having me.
So the medical condition that ended Henrik Lundqvist's playing career, recurrent pericarditis, or RP, has really set him up to make another great save. Dr. Salek, can you describe what is recurrent pericarditis and what the symptoms are?
Sure. So the pericardium is the fibrous sac around the heart, and it can get inflamed. That's what itis is. So pericarditis is inflammation of the pericardium, and it can really cause very debilitating chest pain. Classic chest pain is chest pain that is worse when you lay down and better when you sit up or lean forward, worse when you take a breath in, and often worse when you exert yourself. It can radiate to your back. It can cause shortness of breath, and it can be quite debilitating. We usually don't know what causes it, though it can sometimes happen in the setting of a surgery or procedure on your heart for another reason. And most patients do well. But in up to a third of cases, patients can initially do well and then have recurrent symptoms, and that's what recurrent pericarditis is.
Henrik Lundqvist has teamed up with Kanitska Pharmaceuticals for a campaign called Life Disrupted to raise awareness about RP. That's Life, D-I-S-R-P-T-E-D. Throughout your pro career, you were aware of a leaky aortic valve in your heart, Henrik, but doctors monitored the condition, but you weren't impacted so much by it until you were a free agent in the fall of 2020 when you signed a one-year contract with the Washington Capitals. And then you went through medical testing and with the new team, and doctors discovered this condition that had worsened significantly. And you were told high-intensity exercise and blows to the chest could put you at risk of sudden death. Tell us about your RP diagnosis and how it's impacted your career and your life.
Yeah, to your point, you know, I was aware of a condition for many years, but it was steady. It was something I kept an eye on, tested every year. And again, it was not a concern, really. And then that fall of 2020, things just escalated real quick. You know, the pressure in my heart tripled. The leak got worse. The aorta started to grow too much. So there was a lot of things happening. And that led to the decision to go in for an open heart surgery. You know, the recovery was challenging at times, but I felt pretty good, pretty fast. I have to say, I was back on the ice after, you know, I'm gonna say 8 weeks. Slow at first, no high shots, but you know, every week I just felt stronger and faster, and I start eyeing the comeback, you know, try to get back to the NHL. But then I would say about 3 months from surgery, one day I just felt massive pain in my chest, in my back. I felt sick. My first thought, it must be related to the surgery. And then I would say maybe 10 days later, I went in for a checkup, and that's when they realized I had pericarditis. And you know, in a way, it was more challenging to deal with than the open heart, just because there was no real game plan in terms of when I could start training. It was more, right now, you need to slow down everything. Don't exercise. Don't do too much. Don't put too much stress on your heart. And for about 3-4 months, it was all about just recover, feeling better. And then I tried to come back, tried to increase my training and the physicality, but realized pretty quickly it was going to be too hard to be at a level where, you know, I could play the game of hockey at a professional level. So I made a decision to retire, walk away from hockey. And I think the key throughout was, you know, I got great guidance, support from doctors. And that alone made me more relaxed and more confident moving forward, because there's a lot of questions early on. You know, how is this going to impact my life? Not only as an athlete, but as a dad and a friend, doing different things, activities. When you have your flare-ups, it's really hard. You know, all you want to do is lay down and rest, and it can be tough at times. But I think that's why I feel really good about this campaign and try to help support, educate people out there dealing with similar symptoms, situations. Again, the step one is to get that diagnosed by talking to doctor, and then get a game plan, treatment plan in place.
We're so glad you're doing well, because I think we were all surprised when you had to leave the ice for good. We didn't really understand as fans and what was going on with you. Dr. Salick, how can someone be sure their symptoms are not being misdiagnosed? And how important is early diagnosis in RP?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, we know from data that the average patient gets 2 or 3 diagnoses before getting the correct diagnosis of recurrent pericarditis, and might see 2 or 3 physicians before getting that diagnosis. So I do think it's really important to get diagnosed early, because there are a number of treatment options for patients with RP, and we can make patients feel better quicker if we can get the diagnosis. And so if you think that you're someone who might have RP, whether you've had pericarditis in the past or you have the typical type of chest pain and debilitating symptoms that Henrik is talking about, it's so important to speak to your doctor about getting the right diagnosis, and therefore we can make a treatment plan that's right for you.
Take us into a conversation you had with your family, Henrik, and finding this out and having to deal with this for so long. When you really got the RP diagnosis, what was said to the kids? What was said to the family?
Well, it was an overwhelming 6 months for sure. Obviously, with the surgery at first, I think that was the big one. Realizing that, you know, that this is for real. This is not a shoulder or a knee issue. So they were great. My wife was great. Family, obviously, that support meant a lot. I think personally, the big challenge when I was diagnosed with RP was I went through something so big with the open heart surgery. I felt like I did all the right things to be back and ready to play. And then I got hit with this diagnosis. And at first, mentally, that was challenging. You know, I had to dig deep to find the strength and positivity. And again, I keep coming back to just have a good game plan moving forward. That helped me. But sometimes the uncertainty is something that we as humans, you know, we stress about it, not knowing. We want to know what's going to happen and how you're going to feel. So that was really helpful, and get guidance. And then, you know, to be honest, you know, I work out now. I live a pretty healthy life. That being said, I do think about my heart a lot. It's something I never did before. But I do think about, you know, how much I'm pushing myself, because I know my body and I know my limits at this point. So it's just finding that balance of living a happy, healthy lifestyle, at the same time be aware of, you know, the challenges that could pop up.
I'm not surprised you're involved in this campaign. You're an athlete that has always given back to the game and your community. You've been very active in the Garden of Dreams Foundation, your Henrik Lundqvist Foundation that empowers children and families around the world through programs in health and education. Who got you started in giving back? Who was the person who told you how important it was to do that?
Well, when I was about 19, 20 years old playing in Sweden, that's the first time I went to a children's hospital, but at that point, you're young, you're so focused on your career. But that was the first experience. But it kind of stuck with me, the impact I had on some of the families. But then moving to New York at age 23, and you said it, the Garden of Dreams Foundation, Madison Square Gardens Foundation, they really showed me and all the other players on the Rangers the impact we can have in the community and the roles we have as players. Again, we're growing up playing a sport for a living. It's our dream, but at the same time, to get that experience where you lend your time or you commit to something where you're helping other people, it was very rewarding. But I would say they taught me a lot early on, my early couple of years in New York City, and now working with my own foundation and the Garden of Dreams Foundation. You know, very rewarding, and you can't do it alone, though. There's a lot of people involved that together, I think we're trying to make a difference.
Dr. Salek, in the Life Disrupted campaign, what does it mean for you as someone who's directly involved with patients to have someone like Henrik Lundqvist be a spokesperson?
I think it's so amazing. You know, I think when I see patients in the office with recurrent pericarditis, they're incredibly worried about how they're feeling, about when their next flare is going to be, about the impact it has on their life, and the impact it has on their overall health. You know, these patients are often young and healthy and want to exercise and want to have an active, healthy lifestyle. And telling them, as Henrik just discussed, that you can't exercise when you have a flare of recurrent pericarditis, that makes the symptoms worse. That's really challenging for patients to hear. But I think having a spokesperson like Henrik, who has lived through this, who has a lot of shared knowledge and experience, and who is a model of what life can look like when you're treated and diagnosed properly, is really inspirational. And that's why I think it's so important that our campaign features him as someone who is a real paragon of what life can look like when you're treated properly.
Well, as you can probably tell, Henrik, I was at your ceremony where number 30 was raised to the rafters at Madison Square Garden in 2022, and that's thanks to my friend Vince Cartier, Rangers season ticket holder. But I want to know what you were thinking about, knowing that all this was going on in your life, and you look up to the rafters and see number 30. How special was that night for you? Because it wasn't just success on the ice, it's been battling a serious condition, and you won that battle as well.
Yeah, that night was just incredible for so many reasons. You know, playing 15 years for the Rangers, it's been a huge part of my life and still is. It just felt like, I don't know, almost like closure for me. You know, my last game was in the bubble, no fans. And just to have that opportunity to thank so many people and feel like I'm part of the Rangers forever in a way.
I missed you guys. I missed you. I really have. I'm so happy to get this moment with my family and my friends. We're up here somewhere. But most of all, I'm so happy I get an opportunity to say thank you. Thank you to all the amazing fans in here and around this great city. You have supported me throughout my career, and it's been an amazing experience, and it's given me so much joy, and it's definitely played a huge part in making my journey so special. So thank you to everyone in here and around the city.
Biggest moment on the ice as a New York Ranger for you?
Biggest moment. I mean, we conference finals at 3 years, that window. We had great teams, a lot of great runs in the playoffs, big games. Obviously, making it to the final, it's a mixed motion there. It was a big moment at the same time, a heartbreak not to win it. But when I do think back on my career, yes, I think about certain games, but more so all the teammates I got to play with and the relationships I created and memories especially. You know, when you start playing the game, you think about, well, in my case, to stop a puck. You don't think about how much the game is going to bring to you and into your life, the experiences, memories, wisdom, you know, and that's something I think a lot about, you know, now when I'm retired and doing other things.
Manson wins the draw from Dominic Moore. Now Murray through center. Oh, that's a strange bounce off the boards. What a stop by Henrik Lundqvist!
You have got to be kidding me. That's a wide open net. Z is in a league of his own.
Crowd on their feet while play continues.
Dr. Salen, I'm curious how much you knew about the King before he got diagnosed, and have you now gone on to watch tapes of this one of the greatest goalies of all time?
I'm actually born and raised in Manhattan, so I've been a major fan for many years, and remember watching the Rangers from when I was a kid when they won the Cup in 94. So it's actually a tremendous honor for me to be here with him today talking about this condition as someone who's admired him from afar for so many years.
I'm also curious, Henrik, now that we're enjoying your work as a broadcaster, how are you seeing the game differently now? And would that have helped you on the ice, knowing everything you see from a different perspective?
Good question. Obviously, now I watch it more as a fan. So there's less emotions involved, less stress, that's for sure. But also the game, and I could see that coming, I would say, last 5 years of my career, just that the information players are getting now. Technology plays a part in that, obviously, but the feedback players are getting and knowledge about, you know, what's working, what's not working, and to implement that into training and how they play, that's been a big change. But working on TV and talk about and analyze it, I'm still learning, I feel like, but I'm having fun doing it. I don't know if I would view the game differently if I went back playing. All I can say is I'm still a fan of the game, and I enjoy watching it.
I'm glad to hear you saying you're having fun, because it certainly seems like the guys on the panel are always having fun, whether it's taking shots at each other or analyzing the game. Dr. Salen, people that want more information about how they can learn about RP, where can they go?
Sure, yeah. So if you're a patient and you think that you might have recurrent pericarditis, the website www.lifedisrupted.com has a lot of patient-facing resources and can get you more information about the condition and how to get it diagnosed and treated.
King, I have to ask you, you're a legend in New York City, and you're also a legend in Sweden. That has to mean a great deal to you. How do you even separate the two?
I don't. I feel like, you know, New York's been my home now for the past 20 years. I feel extremely comfortable in New York City. My family loves it there. My life is there. In terms of, you know, interacting with fans, and it's something that I really appreciate now being, what is it, almost 5 years, right, since I played. So I just appreciate the, you know, the fans in New York City and in Sweden, when they come up and talk about memories. One of the coolest things is when I see families and dads come up, you know, I brought my son to so many games, and the kids talk about their experience being at Madison Square Garden so many times, and I was part of their childhood in a way, and I find that very cool. And also New Yorkers are very cool about the whole thing, so I feel relaxed in a lot of these conversations. And it's been, you know, a place that I've been calling home for a long time, and I just love being part of the community.
Probably the only time I wore a suit for Sports Jam, because you are Mr. Fashion, and I knew that I couldn't do this interview with you and Dr. Salen without putting on a jacket. Best teammate that you've ever had, and why?
Ooh, best teammate. It's hard to rank one. You know, I feel like every year you had different personalities because the team changed over time, obviously. But rookie year was special. You know, there was so much to take in. I remember the player Jason Strudwick. He was such a good teammate. He was funny. In terms of friendships, there's so many guys that, you know, you created strong bonds with, you know, over the years. I'm thinking about Haglund, Zuccarello, Dominic Moore. It's hard to pick one, though. But again, you know, when you think about the 15 years and friendships that you created and different experiences, that's a big part of, you know, the great memories you think of, those friendships, 100%.
Speaking of memories, no one will ever forget not only that night that number 30 was raised to the rafters at MSG, but you will never be forgotten in not only Rangers fans, but NHL history. So congratulations on an amazing career and continued success, King Henrik, on your broadcasting career as well.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Dr. Salek, Henrik Lundqvist not only saved pucks, but now he's saving lives, and so are you. So I would imagine that's so satisfying.
You know, it's a wonderful space to be in. I think what's great about recurrent pericarditis is that there are a lot of treatment options now, and we can make patients feel better. And I think, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, patients felt like they're may have been less hope, and they couldn't have lived the type of life that Henrik is living now. But there's so many treatment options and diagnostic modalities to get patients diagnosed and treated faster and more efficiently and better. And so it's really very gratifying to be part of this community, and that's why I'm so excited to be part of this campaign.
Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us on Sports Jam. You're doing important work, and we appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
You can see my entire Sports Jam interview with Henrik Lundqvist and Dr. Jonathan Salek on the WBGO YouTube channel. Many cartoons and movies through the years have featured jazzy scores, but one cartoon in the late 90s is particularly special to WBGO's Anna Gordon.
If this tune sounds familiar, you probably grew up with the coolest, jazziest Nicktoon of the 1990s, Hey Arnold. I recently sat down with creator Craig Bartlett and composer Jim Lang to talk about the jazz-soaked sound that defined the show.
I really got more into jazz in my 20s. I realized once I kind of got out of the house and got out on my own and started actually actively collecting music, and it wasn't just under the influence of, like, yeah, our tiny record player and my two older sisters, who had great musical taste. I can remember my sister bringing home Sly and the Family Stone's greatest hits, and I played the vinyl off of that one. Even the Arnold Pilot, we do a little James Brown knockoff because we couldn't license anything, and we couldn't get, you know, we got a James Brown sound-alike. I really deeply got into him for a while there.
My dad liked jazz, and there was some jazz vinyl in the house. Oscar Peterson, he was a huge Oscar Peterson fan, so I listened to a ton of Oscar Peterson. And really, the seminal piece of music for me, the thing that really turned the lights on, was Rhapsody in Blue, which I had that played for me. I think I was probably 7 years old, and the music teacher in my grade school sat us all down one day, and, you know, you talk about the top of your head blowing off. It's like, that's amazing. And I went home, and there was an LP of Rhapsody in Blue, and I snagged that record. I took it upstairs and I put it on my Hopalong Cassidy record player and played it over and over and over until I'm sure there was absolutely no vinyl left on the surface of the record. I also want to give a shout out to Johnny Costa, who was the piano player who did Mr. Rogers, who live scored Mr. Rogers every episode of that, because that Johnny Costa was a monster. And, you know, the music is really soft and sweet and gentle. You know, it's not banging at all, but it's jazz language, and it's really improvisational. So, you know, hats off to him too.
So Arnold, he's like my age. Where would you imagine he is today? Is he working in public radio?
Why not? Absolutely. Trying to keep public radio going. Fighting the good fight.
He could be DJing, actually, I think.
I do believe there is a vinyl floating around out there somewhere. Is that true, Craig?
Yes. Hey Arnold, the Music, Volume 1. And we're
very patiently waiting for the permission to go ahead and do volume two. All I care about is keeping the legacy of Hey Arnold alive as long as I can, because I always would do more stories if I could. And I'm sure Jim feels the same way.
You can hear my entire conversation with Hey Arnold creator Craig Bartlett and composer Jim Lang at WBGO.org. I'm Anna Gordon, WBGO News.
Thanks for listening to the WBGO Journal. Join us next Saturday morning at 5:30 for another edition of the award-winning WBGO Journal. In the meantime, stay tuned to the world's greatest jazz and blues station, WBGO and WBGO.org.